outside. And all them crazy murderers will never run from inside. You try to keep me down cause you see not joy. All them knows them from, so you call a man a boy. I ain't a tyke and shall see, open up your eyes.
The thing that makes Judaism dangerous to everybody, to every race, to every nation, to every idea, is that we smash things that aren't true. We don't believe in the boundaries of nation state. We don't believe in the ideas of these individual gods that protect individual groups of people. These are all artificial constructions, and Judaism really teaches us how to see that. In a sense, our detractors have us right in that we are a corrosive force. We're breaking down the false gods of all nations and all people because they're not real.
Here we go, folks. It is Sunday, December the 20th, 2020, and you are listening to today's edition of the Ugly Truth broadcast. Welcome to the program, folks. Hope all of you of goodwill are doing well. And a Merry Christmas to all of you of goodwill. Yeah, you have to qualify things, folks, because otherwise you wind up casting your pearls before swine. And of course, since this is Christmas, this is the celebration of the birthday of Jesus Christ. Of course, we should pay close attention to those things, that the words of wisdom that Jesus left for us. One of which is that you should not cast your pearls before swine. In other words, folks, we should be discriminating. We should be discriminating about those with whom we keep company, those we allow into our inner circle, those who we wish well. Of course, you can always wish even evildoers well, in that they will turn from the destructive path that they're on and walk away from this darkness that dictates their lives. But by the same token, you know, we were told by Jesus Christ that we should only make that attempt three times with a particular individual. Three times, and then after that, shake the dust from your clothes and move on. So, having said that, folks, nevertheless, once again, to all of you of goodwill, a very Merry Christmas. Let's see, just some quick housekeeping details. Folks, first of all, a very sincere thank you to the folks who really, for whatever reason, appreciated last week's program. They said that there was something about it that that really struck a chord, and I'm glad to hear that, folks, because that's what I want. I want to be effective above all else because I take this business very seriously, and I don't want to go out there and to just make a bunch of noise at a time when there really is just too much noise out there. There are just too many people running their mouths and saying nothing, or basically just, you know, dumping a bunch of useless disinformation and garbage into the discussion. And so what should be a symphony of truth and a symphony of wisdom and enlightenment, instead it just turns into this wall of noise. And of course, this is a situation and a strategy which our enemy uses to great success against us, the fact that we do not discern. And you know, on that note, I'm just going to touch on this very quickly, folks, because I promised all of you almost a month ago that I wasn't going to devote too much time and attention to discussing what was, you know, an often discussed topic in past programs. But I'm going to pick up on something that we did talk about last week, which was this question of what if. And of course, I used that question, what if, in order to lay out a possible scenario involving what right now is considered to be fact, the killing of General Qasem Soleimani, head of the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. And I threw this out there as a question, what if? What if instead of Soleimani being killed, what if instead he was grabbed? He was snatched by a team of CIA operatives and that Trump is at this very moment holding on to him, and that Trump plans to, this is all part of the question, not even a theory or a thesis, but a question, but what if Trump is planning to use him as a gesture of goodwill towards the people of Iran in trying to bring Iran to the negotiating table for, you know, defusing this time bomb that is about to go off in the Middle East. Well, I'm going to pick up on that little riff there, folks, of what if, and I'm going to use that to frame the following, hopefully not too long discussion, involving the alternative media. Now, I swore off, referring to, you know, this thing that I had been involved in years ago as the movement, because there isn't a movement, and I, at this point now, I seriously doubt that there ever was. I consider what, at least my own involvement in this, to be part of the struggle, I'll call it that, the struggle, because it is a struggle, folks, and but as far as calling it a movement, I won't do that anymore. And if I ever do, I'm going to fine myself 10 cents. Every time I say that, the movement, in a way to, you know, highlight the deficiencies of something that is not there and probably never was, I'm going to put a dime in my little piggy bank. But we're going to start off today's program by with that question, what if, folks? Now, you know, obviously now we can see, you know, what we are all going through right now. And when I say what we are all going through, I'm talking about really the entire planet. I think maybe the only ones not affected by it are the penguins in either the North or the South Pole. Everybody is affected by this. And it all boils down to one person, folks, and his name is Donald J. Trump. And if the events of, especially the last year, but really if we want to be perfectly honest and accurate about it, the events of the last 5 years, if these events taken together are not enough to make it clear to people, otherwise intelligent people, that there is and there has been and there will be, for the foreseeable future, a fanatical and a concerted effort to get Trump out of the captain's chair in Washington, D.C., then I don't know what the hell it's going to take, folks, to make people understand this. Interestingly enough, I spend the mornings, every morning, reading. I don't read any alternative news anymore. Folks, because it's too depressing. It's too. I mean, you read anything off of the alternative news, and it just makes you want to close up and pack up and do something else, besides something substantive, something productive in trying to steer this thing away from the cliff to where, you know, where we're all headed. I spend my mornings reading the Israeli press and what are overtly Jewish newspapers, because I know that whatever it is that I need to know and whatever it is that needs to be analyzed and picked apart and pulled apart and understood, it comes from them, because they are running the show, folks. They are running the show, and we're going to hear a little soundbite here in a little bit. From somebody who states that quite plainly, and he is of the non-Gentile persuasion. He's a rabbi, and he talks about that. We'll get to that in a little bit. But nevertheless, in setting up this discussion that we're having here, this what if, folks, I want you to get into your little time machine here, and I want you to go back about, I don't know how many years, 8 years I think it was, something like that. We'll just say 10 years. Let's get into our time machine, and let's go back to these moments where these decisions were made on the part of certain individuals and groups to adopt a certain narrative about something And I know you're tired of hearing about it, folks, but I'm going to go ahead and bring it up anyway, because it does serve a very it makes a very important point here. Let's go back to that event that took place. I can't remember exactly how many years ago it was. 8 years, maybe. The anniversary of it was just about a week ago, and it was the shooting, the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary. About 25, 26 people died, a lot of kids. And certain individuals, not a whole lot of them, but enough, and a large number of their readers and listeners and followers jumped on board with them. A few individuals, such as Jim Fetzer and Gordon Duff, and eventually this would drag Alex Jones in as well, they adopted this narrative that no shooting took place, that no one died, that the entire thing was a scripted hoax, not a false flag, folks, a hoax. There's a difference. You see, a false flag is like what happened with 9/11, okay, where they pulled off this act of mass murder. Group A pulled it off, but it got blamed on Group B. But nevertheless, in the process, you know, a terrorist attack did take place, okay, and a lot of people died. Okay, there's a difference between a false flag and a hoax. Now, what Fetzer and Duff and, let's see, eventually Alex Jones and a few other half-witted and half-sane people, the narrative that they created is that nothing happened at all, that it was just a thing that had been scripted, and the, you know, fake blood and crisis actors and all the rest of it. Now, since that happened, and despite the very clear and grave warnings that were issued regularly from individuals such as Mike Piper and yours truly, and a very, very, very small handful of others, that this was a disaster in the making, and that it was going to destroy our credibility at a time when, you know, I mean, let's face it, folks, whatever progress that we make in terms of our credibility, it is measured in millimeters and not in miles, okay? You know, all the odds are stacked against us. You know, those who follow the website know that I have chosen as the avatar, I guess is the word that we would use, is this picture of the Greek character Sisyphus, who's rolling this giant boulder up this hill, okay? And that is what it is like trying to bring the truth at a time when lies are just so prevalent and so suffocating. And despite the amount of rational discussion that took place on the part of Mike Piper and yours truly and a handful of others, nevertheless, this narrative really, really took off, and it really became, Mike always described it as this lollipop that a lot of people within this thing that we're not going to mention, that they really got hold of and just wouldn't let go. Well, okay, folks, so here comes the what if part. Okay, now right now, you know, we are facing something that I don't think any of us really imagined seeing. And I'm not talking about the pandemic or the crashed economy or anything like that, but rather what is the open and overt real-life, real-time attempted coup d'etat that has been going on for 4 years against Donald J. Trump. Now, you know, with this last election, folks, Trump got somewhere between 75 and 80 million votes, something like that. Okay, I mean, he tapped into something really, really big, really big. Now, I want you to imagine, and within the context of that, folks, a lot of his followers, a lot of them, they are people who maybe 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, whatever, they would have been amongst the skeptics and the naysayers. Okay, they would have been people who, if you had gone up to them and said, "Hey, did you know that on the morning of 9/11, there were five Israeli intelligence officers who were arrested, and they were seen cheering as the towers were coming down, and that they were held in detention for about 3 months until they were quietly sent back to Israel. And then after they got back there, they spoke on an Israeli talk show, and they admitted that they were Mossad and that they had been sent by the government of Israel to, quote, document the event. Now, if you were to bring something up like this up, even to, you know, some of Trump's supporters today, maybe 10, 15 years ago, they wouldn't have been interested. Or they may have even become hostile to what you were telling them, okay? Now, though, now, especially with Trump and especially with his strategy of being willing to push the envelope further and his willingness to engage in conspiracy theorizing. You know, you have Q, this group, and they're always throwing all sorts of conspiracy theories out. Trump has attacked the media directly, called it the fake news. He said that they are enemies of America, that they're the most dangerous enemies we have. He has totally opened up this this can of worms, and he's got 75 million Americans who are now, they are much, much more in the mood, folks. Much more in the mood, much more willing. Their inhibitions have been lowered considerably in terms of what kinds of conspiracy theories they are willing to entertain and believe, and how far they're willing to go, you know, in the logical progression of, you know, what these conspiracy theories are all about. Now, here comes the what if, folks. I want you to imagine if this thing, I'm not going to say what it, what we used to call it in years past, if this thing, our thing, La Cosa Nostra, right? That's what that means in Italian, folks. La Cosa Nostra means our thing. If our thing, if we had, what if we had maintained a, you know, for the most part, a certain degree of sanity, if we had, you know, stayed on the same page and it was the right piece of music, and if we had, you know, not blown it in terms of our credibility with this crazy crap such as no one died at Sandy Hook and all, you know, the Boston Marathon bombing, that was a hoax. No bomb went off and nobody got killed and it was just an exercise and they had crisis actors and ketchup for blood and all the rest of that. What if instead of going down these roads and allowing crazies like this to insert this, these particular narratives into our compass, and especially with regards to Alex Jones, folks. Now, I never listened to him, I've never found him to be anything except a vaudeville act. But the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump, candidate Donald Trump, appeared on Alex Jones's program. So Donald Trump understood that Alex Jones was a force with which to be reckoned because he has a huge audience. Huge audience. Now, what if, folks, what if, we'll just take, for example, Alex Jones, because he obviously is the biggest bull in the herd. What if he had maintained a sane dialogue with regards to forbidden topics and forbidden knowledge? What if instead of him talking about no one died at Sandy Hook and the Boston Marathon bomb, I don't know for a fact that he does say this, folks. I don't know what his position on the Boston Marathon bombing was, or, you know, was. But instead, you know, instead of him going down this road to Crazyville, which he himself admitted when he was being deposed because he's being sued for millions of dollars, what if he had maintained a safe, sane, responsible course? What if he had spent a lot of time talking about 9/11 and talking about the five Mossad agents who were arrested after they had been seen by witnesses cheering? Okay. Now, of course, the argument can be made, well, the only reason that he has the audience that he does is because, you know, the organized Jewish interests wanted him to have that audience. And I think there's probably is a certain degree of truth to that, folks. We know that, well, I mean, just the way that it is. I mean, if you truly are a threat to their interests, then they're either going to ignore you or they're going to strangle you to death. They're going to make sure you don't have the what you need in today's world in order to function, which is money. So, you know, the argument can be made that the only reason that he was able to attain the level of success that he did is because, you know, he was in some way, he was serving their interests, probably because he made sure not to go down that road. But let's just say, folks, let's say he had left the whole Sandy Hook thing aside and he didn't have these strikes against him. And then when Trump came along as candidate Trump, Alex Jones had started this other narrative, okay, that absolutely has to be introduced and understood in order for there to be a resolution to the problems that we're facing. What if? Where would we be right now? Where would President Trump be right now in getting a noose around this dog's neck? Okay. Where would we be if that had been the case? We'd be a lot further along in this struggle, folks, than we are right now. Okay, we wouldn't be probably not dealing with a pandemic, probably not dealing with but maybe we would be. I don't know. But you know what? We would still be better positioned than we are now. We would have all sorts of people that we spent years trying to bring along, years trying to convince, years trying to make them see the light, who would be, well, maybe they wouldn't come to us, but maybe they would. Maybe they would say, you know, when you said this, I thought you were crazy, and I didn't pay any attention to it, but now I'm starting to see maybe you're right, you know, because now we've got this president here who's saying this stuff, and now it's, now it makes sense. Now, this is not an exercise, folks, in I told you so, as much as it is an exercise in saying, let's learn from our past mistakes. Now, as I said, I think it was on the first or second program, it isn't over yet, folks. Okay, we still have a lot of fighting to do. Now, I won't say that I'm confident. I'll say I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that if we do adopt the proper narrative on these things now, and we don't tolerate the crazies amongst us, and we are very discriminating, okay, about what we believe and what we say and what we do, that whatever the end result of this is going to be, that it will be a victory that is purchased with a lot less blood and suffering and struggle than is otherwise going to be the case. Now, I say this, folks, because, like I said, I was just thinking this week after reading some of the comments, you know, from last week's program, that this question of what if, and I'll tell you really what prompted me to have this conversation. It was a conversation I was having with our dear friend, Egeria. And she was very, obviously she always is. I mean, I could sit and I could read out of an Italian cookbook on the program. And she would think that it was wonderful. God bless dear Jerry. Anyway, she said the reason that it struck her as powerfully as it did, that entire what if exercise, was that it's not the idea necessarily that was contained in it, or the thesis or the question, which is what I prefer to call it, because I'm not going to theorize that Soleimani is alive. I hope he is, and I wonder whether he is. What she said that she found so important about it is that it is teaching us how to think, how to look at things. And that sparked a thought in myself as I was listening to that. I said, you know, we have to adopt the ability of thinking in abstract ways, because this is what our enemy does. Our enemy doesn't just think in a one-dimensional way or a two-dimensional or three-dimensional or four-dimensional or whatever. They have got so many ways of putting things together, painting a picture that is used to seduce and hypnotize the masses. And unless we are able to keep up and think almost as abstractly as they do, then we will forever be slaves and prisoners to the false narrative and the deception that they put in front of us. And we can see the very real world, real life, real time effect that these deceptions and this hypnosis that it has over our world. Because even if you and I... let's say that we manage to say to remain 90% non-hypnotized. That's not the case with the rest of the world in which we live. Okay, and the quality of our lives, is completely dependent upon what other people believe. Okay, and this is very important, folks. In fact, that's the reason why. I am going to make this little exercise here of what if. I'm going to make that a part of the program every opportunity that I can, because this is basically how, you know, this little think tank that we have going on here, this is how we are going to approach figuring out these problems, is through this process of what if. Because this is what they do, folks. This is what they call war gaming. Okay, where they lay out all of these different scenarios. Okay, war with Canada, war with Mexico, war with Guatemala, and they plug every possible variable into it, and then the reaction on the one part, and then the reaction on the other, and back and forth. It's called gaming, game theory, and this is what we have to do as well, folks. And we can't. Let the crazies that have been deliberately inserted amongst us. And if not deliberately inserted, then what has happened is that once these weeds popped up in the garden, our enemies made sure to feed and water them so that those weeds took over the garden. And we can't allow these types to dominate the discussion, because now we're living with the effect of it, folks. And it's the real deal. It's not the thing, it's not the theoretical thing that was being warned years ago by Mike Piper and yours truly and a few others, that this is going to ruin our credibility, blah, blah, blah. If we hadn't allowed those amongst us, such as Jim Fetzer and John Friend and Gordon Duff and a lot of these other kooks, to get control of the narrative and ruin what, you know, at least some of us had fought really hard to build, which was our credibility, then people such as Alex Jones, maybe he would, I mean, there's no telling with his audience size, given the 5 years of Trump, how much further along we could be right now, just because of that one fatal mistake that was made. Anyway, folks, let's see. Again, as I have on, at least I can remember one of the previous programs, we need to pay close attention to the sound bite at the beginning of the program there. And again, I'm going to make this as a part of the regular weekly program, folks, which is to make everybody understand, okay, you want to know why your life is falling apart, pay attention to the words of that particular individual, Douglas Rushkoff. You want to know why World War I happened, listen to Rushkoff. World War II, listen to Rushkoff. The Bolshevik Revolution, listen to Rushkoff. You want to know why, at least here in the United States, we are slaughtering somewhere between 4 and 5,000 of our unborn children a day? Listen to what Rushkoff is saying. You want to know why we are in the middle of a pandemic and a collapsing economy and a contested election and very, very likely just the complete meltdown of all political, social, and economic order in very, very short time? Listen to Rushkoff. Okay. That's the beautiful thing, if that's the adjective that we want to use for something like this. That's the beautiful thing about, something coming out of the horse's mouth. You know, that old saying, I heard it right from the horse's mouth. When you have somebody such as him, Douglas Rushkoff, this writer and commentator of the non-Gentile persuasion, saying that we Jews, you know, this is what makes our religion so dangerous to everyone. And look at the word he uses, folks. Dangerous. You know, danger denotes injury and death. Okay? Not controversial. Okay, dangerous. Meaning that these people being driven by this very dark energy, okay, this religion that they follow known as Judaism, that they are engaged in at times a silent war and at times a very loud and in-your-face war. But nevertheless, that they are engaged in a war against the rest of us because we believe things that they say are not true. Our religion, our cultures, our nationalities, the way we raise our families, the way all of the things that encompass the Gentile way of life, they are in a declared open war against all of that. Now, I bring this up, folks, because it has been, and it still remains to this day, unfortunately, it has been and it remains this regular discussion, debate, about the difference between, you know, that there are Zionists and then there are Jews. And, you know, I suppose it's to a certain degree, many, many years ago, I used to have that debate too. Not necessarily to with the same degree of involvement that others did. It didn't take long for me, folks, to figure out that, you know, Zionism, it's like the letters of the alphabet. A through Z, 26 letters, okay? Zionism is one letter, the letter Z, okay? When we're talking about Judaism, talking about the religion of the Jews and the religion which our Jewish writer Douglas Rushkoff describes as being dangerous and as a corrosive force to everyone, as he said, to all peoples, to all countries. There's an entire alphabet to fill. Zionism is just one aspect of it, okay, the letter Z. Before that, if we're going to look at this in the timeline of things, folks, okay, Zionism just popped up 100 years ago. The Jewish problem has been with mankind for about 6,000 years, okay? So, you know, if we want to look at this in terms of being in alphabetical order, okay, to simply focus, I mean, imagine how limited we would be in our ability to communicate and to write, to transfer ideas and all of the rest of that, if there was only one letter that we were allowed to use in the alphabet, the letter Z. Okay? It would be a disaster. It would paralyze us. It would stop us dead in our tracks. And likewise, in our understanding and in our trying to solve this, the problem associated with this quote-unquote corrosive force, if we simply limit our discussion to the Z letter, the Z word, Zionism, then it leaves out 25 other important letters that can be used to flesh out this picture. Let's start with the letter A. Okay? The alphabet of Judaism, the letter A. Abortion on demand. Okay? As horrible as suffering that the Palestinians and other people in the Middle East have had to go through as a result of these feral destroyers of civilization and these land thieves, what I now refer to as the pirates of Judea. The fact of the matter is, folks, is that it doesn't begin to compare to the blood that has been shed just in the United States. In terms of our greatest resource, which is our children, as a result of abortion on demand that has been that was shoved down the throat legally in this country by organized Jewish interests. And that's a fact, folks. You don't have to. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is a fact. And it's a fact which organized Jewish interests will be the first to admit to. Raise their hand and say, hell yes, we brought it to America. And hell yes, we make sure that it stays there. Okay, so we have abortion on demand. We have anti-family. We're talking about the letter A here, folks. Anti-Christian. Anti-Gentile. I mean, just with the letter A, we could write an entire book dealing with all of the various corrosive compounds that have been used to destroy our civilization, our culture, whatever. That's just with the letter A. And that's why, folks, I guess where I'm going with this is, unfortunately, this is the discussion that we should be having. I mean, it's as plain to see, folks. It is like walking through, I remember years and years ago, when I was invited to go and meet with then President of Iran, Dr. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, a great man. And, you know, I had a long wait between for that night when I was supposed to go with these other guests and to meet him at the hotel. And so I decided to take a stroll through Manhattan because he was there, Dr. Ahmadinejad, President Ahmadinejad, was there to address the UN General Assembly. And so anyway, I went through a stroll and I started walking south and I came to Chinatown. Okay, and it was literally, Chinatown is exactly what the name denotes. I mean, everything is written in, I guess it's Chinese, I don't know, but it's something like that. I mean, I don't know if it was interspersed with Korean or with Japanese or whatever, some other Oriental, written language, I don't know. But there's no missing the fact that you have just stepped out of one world and you have just stepped into another. And only somebody who is blind or who isn't paying attention will miss what is the undeniably obvious. Everything is Oriental, okay? From the restaurants to the signs to the smell of cabbage, all the people, okay? Okay, and likewise, folks, the only people who try to make the case that this corrosive force, the corrosive force of Judaism, doesn't play a role in the very, very serious existential problems that we're facing right now is the equivalent of somebody walking through Chinatown and, well, I'll give you an example, folks, and I'm a little a little bit reluctant to use this, but this is a funny little thing that my good friend Paulie from Alaska, who was on the program a couple of years ago, I think twice he was on the program. We had a great time. Anyway, he's one of my bestest buddies, folks, and so you know he and I talk about politics a lot. And I said, Paul, you know what it's like? And he said, what? Now, I'm going to have to be very careful, very circumspect about the language that I use here, folks, because I certainly don't want to scandalize anyone. But you know how it is when two guys get talking, okay? And I said, it's like this, Paul. I said, imagine that there's this young man walking down the sidewalk. And this woman, slightly older woman, she sees him walking down the sidewalk, and she says, he's a pretty good-looking guy, and I haven't been with a man for a while. I'll see if he wants to come in. And so she walks out on the porch as he's approaching her house, and she says, excuse me, can you come in here for a second? There's something I want to show you. And so the young man, you know, he trots up the steps and walks up on the porch, and she takes him by the hand, and she walks him in the house and closes the door. And she's got him by the hand, and she walks him back to her bedroom, at which point she takes off every stitch of clothing that she has, and then she crawls up on the bed, and she positions herself anatomically in such a way that it would leave no doubt in the mind of any normal, healthy, red-blooded, heterosexual male what she had in mind. At which point our young man says, well, excuse me, ma'am, what did you want to show me? And so she's thinking to herself, okay, well, maybe he's a little thick in the head. And she says, well, come and get it, big boy. And he says, well, come and get what? And now she's starting to think there's something really wrong with him. And she says, just take me. And he says, oh, okay, sure. Where do you want to go? Okay. Well, in a sense, folks, in a sense. This is a similar situation that we're facing these days with these people who just don't get it when it comes to figuring out what is the painfully and I would say dangerously obvious with regards to this corrosive force. Okay. And you know what, folks, on that note, we're going to take just a quick break here, and we're going to listen to an extremely troubling soundbite. And this comes from this horrible, horrible Hebrew. He's a rabbi. I think his name is Rabbi Mizrahi or something like that. And he is, well, he's basically saying what we Gentiles whisper in hushed tones to each other, but which very few of us are willing to say in public. We're just going to listen to what it is he has to say.
The Jews run the show in the world, not because they want, because that's what God wants. And it's written in the Torah that the non-Jews admit that is the word of God. If they didn't admit, what's the proof? But in the Torah it says that in every nation you will be, you will always be the highlight of the place. Even though we have a very small community compared to America, 300 million Americans, 5 million Jews. There's no comparison. But the Jews are everywhere. Politics, all the assistants of Trump, Jews. All the assistants of Sleepy Joe, Jews. Obama, Jews. Everyone around there, Reform Jews, Conservative Jews, Chabadnik, this, convert. It's all somehow. Same thing was in Spain. Same thing was in many different countries. When the country hosts the Jews, and the Jews live in that country with freedom, God bless this place thanks to the Jews there. As soon as they torture them, or kill them, or throw them out of the country, the end of this empire shortly after comes. Let's go one by one. The Roman Empire, when they started with the Jews, that was their end. After the Jews, no more Roman Empire. The Greeks, same story. Babylonians disappeared. Persians, Achashverosh, disappeared. In Iran, modern days, the Iranian Shah was very good to the Jews. Iran was the fourth powerful country in the world in his time. After Russia, America, I think Germany, Iran, it's paradise. so wealthy, selling oil, controlling the market. Iran was an empire 30 years ago. They kicked all the Jews ran away when Khomeini came. They went back in time 1,000 years. There's nobody else what to eat there. The end of Iran came. Germany, they killed the Jews. They used to be a massive empire. They stayed a small country now, nothing special. Spain, same thing. The Jews were in power. They did the Spanish Inquisition. Spain and Portugal, nothing is left from them. Russia, there were many hundreds of thousands of Jews there. Russia was a very powerful empire. Everyone was checking from them. The Jews left Russia. The USSR collapsed. Now the Jews gonna run away from America. Most of them assimilated, so they'll become goyim already, their children. So they have nothing to wear because they're not Jewish. But those who are still religious, they will all get up within a year or two or five. We'll all have to run away from here. Once we will leave this place, Hashem will bury America. That's what's gonna happen. Not because I'm some kind of a prophet. I'm not giving you any prophecies here. I'm just describing to you a divine formula. The chosen people, where they're going to live. And you'll be good to them and nice to them. I will bless you from the place. The Torah has a source for it.
Okay, folks. So that was our unesteemed rabbi talking about how Hashem, that's the name that Jews have given to, I guess it was Yahweh and now it's Hashem, that he is going to bury America. And how he, this is all part of the divine formula, and how he has done this to other nations in the past who dared to offend the apple of his eye, his chosen people, the Israelites, the Hebrews, the Jews, the Judites, whatever combination of consonants and vowels we want to use in describing them. Okay. Now, I bring this up, folks, because this has been a running theme here on this program for many, many years, which is that, you know, this, all of this upheaval that we're dealing with right now, and especially that upheaval that began with 9/11, it is all part and parcel of this plan on the part of this corrosive force to indeed bury America, okay? And this was one of the arguments that I had a million times with people after 9/11, even my own fellow Catholics and Christians and all the rest of that, and you could see that they were just gulping the Kool-Aid down that the Jewish press was giving them about Islam and about Muhammad and 72 virgins and jihad and all the rest of it. You could see how they were just gulping it down, and you're trying to tell them, don't do that, don't do it. This is designed to destroy you, okay? This isn't just about, you know, calumniating, you know, bringing calumny on another group of people. They want to get a war started. A war that at the end of it is going to see our destruction as well. Okay. Didn't make any effect. Okay. These people, they're just pathologically stupid, folks. I mean, there's a reason why the Jews refer to Gentiles as cattle. Okay. And unfortunately, it's true. Okay. There are very few of us who apply some degree of discrimination, okay, as we talked about at the beginning of the program, to where we make sure that whatever it is that's in that cup, we know exactly what it is before we gulp it down. Anyway, this rabbi, you know, is basically laying it out, folks, that they plan to destroy America. And as we have discussed on this program many times, other than the fact that that they are extremely jealous of the material blessings that we have in this country and that we've always had, you know, being very covetous of that and jealous of that, it's also the fact that America, along with all of the other manifestations of the Western world, Europe, Canada, and all the rest, that we are the great, great, great grandchildren of the same Romans that destroyed Jerusalem 2,000 years ago. Now, he talks about in his little sermon there, he talks about how the woman, you know, they always, it doesn't matter what language they come from, they all have that speech impediment. And you know what's interesting, folks? Moses is said to have had, according to the Old Testament, Moses is said to have suffered from a speech impediment as well. And I think that I just find that very interesting, because they always have that. If you listen to them, they have that thing about their speech that you can just tell from a mile away that they are part of that corrosive force. Anyway, and so what we have, as we have discussed on this program, folks, for about 5 years now, is that we have a new Roman emperor in the form of Donald Trump, who is substantively doing what he can to prevent what he knows is that planned burial of America. And this is why they hate him the way that they do. Now, let's see, we are already at 46 minutes here, and I haven't even begun. No, I did. Okay, ABCs of Judaism. What if? Yes. Okay, very quickly. Of course, the news, folks, is that the COVID virus is exploding. Now, I bring this up because there are some people that with whom I used to correspond, and unfortunately, I'm still on their email list, and they're constantly sending out every single day 2, 3, 4 articles dealing with how COVID-19 is not real. It's being hyped. Nobody really is getting sick. Nobody's dying. Okay, well, I certainly was willing to believe that, folks, 6 months ago, almost a year ago, because I said at the time, my fear was that the coronavirus that was out, that it wasn't really a bad virus. And that it was done deliberately, that they let loose the less dangerous one in order to lure President Trump into this trap of downplaying the seriousness of it, so that they would have him on record in terms of him, you know, in terms of his incompetence. Okay, now look what's happened. All these people all around the world, they're all sick and dying and blah, blah, blah. I also maintained at the time, folks, that the coronavirus, COVID-19, that it was cooked up in some bioweapons lab, probably in Israel. Okay, and I still lean in that direction, despite the fact we don't have the kind of hard evidence for this that we do, for example, Israeli involvement in 9/11. I mean, look, we've got these five intelligence officers who were the only arrests that were made that day, and who later admitted that they were sent to document the event, indicating, obviously, foreknowledge of it. Okay, so we don't have any really hard, that I know of, evidence that Israel was the one who cooked this up, other than the fact that we know that germ warfare, biowarfare, is something that Israel has spent a lot of time working on. And in particular, she has developed ethnic-specific biowarfare to target people of Semitic descent, such as yours truly. I'm sure that she has come up with viruses that target specific genomes of everybody. There's probably a vial that says for the Irish, and some for the Germans, some for the Italians, some for the French, some for the Sicilians. I'm sure that she has done something along those lines. Well, right now, folks, the news is that this virus is spiking. And I don't think it is necessarily the same hoax that it was 6 months ago. And I think I may have alluded to this on one of the previous programs, that the closer and closer that this election thing, that it gets to D-Day, which we are approaching, and that it doesn't appear as though Trump is going to give up the throne, that at some point as we approach that, because this is basically, you know, they're pointing a gun at him and saying, you know, we've released the one that indeed was just a hoax. Look what we were able to do with that lie. You know, we were able to shut down the entire world economy. And that was just the warning shot. That was the shot over the bow. If you don't step down, if you don't concede, then we're gonna let the next one out, and it's going to be worse. It's going to be deadlier than to just the older citizens. And I think that that's what we're seeing right now, folks. I think that they have let the next phase out. Of course, the biologists and doctors dealing with this, virologists, what they're saying is that it has mutated, which I suppose is possible, okay? But nevertheless, I think that we are in the next phase of this thing. And it's just going to get worse, okay? It will get worse and worse, folks, because as our unesteemed rabbi says here, they intend to bury America. Now, very quickly, folks, in the 10 or 15 minutes that we have left, I'm going to throw out another what if. And Okay. So anyway, as those of you who listen to this program and follow the website know, I have been diligently working on this new book. And it is entitled Crystal Clear. That's Crystal with a K as in William Crystal. Crystal Clear, Neocon Incorporated's Seek and Destroy Mission Against Donald J. Trump and Against His Plans for a 9/11 U-Turn. And the thesis of this book is that it is the neocons, the same neocons who pulled off 9/11 and who got this entire clash of civilizations war on terror kicked off, that they are the principal players behind all of the political instability that we have been witnessing now for the last 5 years as it relates to the person and the presidency of Donald J. Trump. And the reason that they want to get rid of him, why they are absolutely devoted to getting rid of him, is because he plans to impose a peace deal on the Middle East that will bring to an end this clash of civilizations, this war on terror, this war against Islam, and which will cage in the virus, that will quarantine the virus in the Middle East, that corrosive force known as the Jewish state. Well, it hit me this week, folks, as I was doing some research, because I'm constantly moving forward and going back, meaning reading stories dealing with Trump, going back reading stories dealing with Kennedy. Every president that has found their heads on the political chopping block by this corrosive force for their insistence upon bringing some type of resolution to this ticking time bomb in the Middle East known as Armageddon, they've all paid the price to some degree for this. Well, as I was reading this fascinating article on Trump, and this article was written about 40 years ago, and it is, I pulled it up here, folks. I'm not going to read the whole article, but I'm going to read the title of it as soon as my screen comes up. Okay, and it is called, this is written in November of 1985, and it is called Donald Trump's Ultimate Deal. And it appeared in Manhattan, Inc. Yep, Manhattan, Inc. It was a magazine. It's no longer in publication, and I was able to dig up this article. Very interesting. It's got a picture of then real estate developer Donald Trump. Much younger man, obviously, and he's holding this dove in his hand. And he's looking into the camera with a very peaceful disposition on his face. And it's called his ultimate, Let me see, make sure I get it right. Donald Trump's ultimate deal. Anyway, this article is fascinating, folks, because in it, he discusses the thing that keeps him awake at night. And that thing is the potential for nuclear war. And he says that there is no topic that is worthy of being discussed. And this is, 45 years ago, is that right? No, 40-something. Well, anyway, 1985. He says there's no topic that needs to be discussed more than this. We have got to do something about nuclear weapons, nuclear proliferation, because he says in the article, he says, in the very beginning, nuclear technology was difficult and only a few people understood it. He said, now it's very easy and it takes nothing for an unstable country being run by an unstable political system or an unstable leader, to get their hands on nuclear weapons and loose them, at which point it all goes out of control, everything. It just becomes something that can't be stopped. And he talks about in this article how he has been working with people at the very top of the U.S. government. Now, I mentioned this 5 years ago, folks. I theorized 5 years ago that Donald Trump has been part of the U.S. intelligence community for probably most of his adult life. And I based this, because I hadn't run into this article yet, but I based this theory, this thesis, on the fact that when you've got that kind of money, and when you are as plugged into international business as much as Trump has been, that there's no way whatsoever that some branch of the U.S. intelligence community is not going to come knocking on your door and seek to pull you into their operations. You see, because if you're operating in international business, then you effectively can be their eyes and ears. And especially if you're somebody like Trump, where you are meeting with princes and prime ministers and popes and presidents and all sorts of other people, which Trump has been. Well, sure enough, folks, in this article here, he's basically laying it out. He's saying, look, I'm working with some very high-level people all the way up to the White House. Now, we mentioned this on one of the recent programs when I was quoting Ronald Reagan when he gave that speech talking about his plans for the Middle East. And he mentioned that his administration is working with people from the private sector, excellent people from the private sector, okay, without naming Trump. Okay, folks, so here is where we are going to go to the next level in our understanding of exactly what it is that has gotten into the fevered, feral mind of organized Jewish interests, and especially the neocons, especially Israel, because that's when you say the word neocon, folks, what you're saying is Israel, and especially the Likud party, okay? Exactly what it is about Trump that has got them in the fits that they are, that they literally are burning the world down right now in order to get him out of office. And of course, like I said, up to this point, folks, it has been about the 9/11 U-turn. It's about ending American wars, the never-ending wars in the Middle East. It's about imposing a peace deal, but it's also about, drum roll please, ladies and gentlemen, taking Israel's nuclear weapons away from her. That's right, folks. The very thing that got John F. Kennedy killed, I guarantee you, folks, this is exactly what Trump is planning to do, is that he wants those nukes out of the hands of these insane religious Judaic nutcases in Israel. Now, he doesn't say this in the article, but he does say something very interesting. He says that really the only, he doesn't like the idea of nuclear weapons at all. But if somebody has to have them, it needs to be the United States and Russia. And the reason he says that is because he says that between those two countries, basically, you know, there's a Russian sphere of influence that covers half the world, and then there's an American sphere of influence that covers half the world. He doesn't even want the French to have them, folks. He says that if he had his way, that he would sanction France until they couldn't stand it anymore, and they gave up their nukes. Now, this is France, folks. This is a Western country. This is a Christian country. It's a it's a quote unquote democracy. Okay, France isn't talking about nuking the world like Israel is. Okay. So how do the mechanics of all of this work? Well, Trump's peace deal between Israel and the Arabs. There have been other peace deals that have been attempted in the past, okay? But one of the things that has always stood in the way of this, and it was one of the things that Kennedy, President Kennedy, found out for himself, was that the Arabs, the more quote-unquote moderate Arabs, they were willing to go along with the partition plan that had been set up, where, you know, 57% of Palestine went to the Jews and 43% went to the Palestinians for their state. That the more moderate Arab states and Arab leaders were willing to go along with this, but they said, we are not going to enter into any kind of agreement with a country such as Israel that has got nuclear weapons pointed at us. Okay. So, this was one of the things, in addition to Kennedy's desire to see a nuclear weapons-free Middle East, this is one of the things that, because, and he understood, and every president since then has understood, that you have got these two extreme forces in the region. Okay, you've got the Jews, who of course are the most extreme of all, and then you have got the Arabs, who are very aggrieved. Okay, and you have to understand why, folks. I mean, the Arabs were promised something by the British during World War I, that if the Arabs helped the British, helped the West defeat the Ottoman Empire, that the Arabs would have their freedom and their independence, because they had been under Turkish rule for 400 years. Okay, and then what happened in the aftermath of that is that the Jews got Palestine, and it just threw, you know, the balance of the region off completely. So Trump and his fears for nuclear war. Now, as I said, he doesn't state this in the article, that he fears these insane Jews having nuclear weapons, but you know that this is part of the equation. So what is the justification that the Israelis have used now for their having nuclear weapons? The justification has been, well, we have to have these things because we're so small of a country, and we're so small in number compared to this wave, this giant horde of Muslims, Arabs, Persians, Turks, and everything else who hate us and that want to wipe us out. So the only way that we can prevent this from happening is to have nuclear weapons. That's been the justification that the Israelis have used for decades for their possessing nuclear weapons. Well, guess what, folks? If there's a peace deal that Trump brings about where all of these Arab nations and the non-Arab nations, such as Iran, if they all stand down and they say, okay, We're going to recognize Israel, and we're going to create this Palestinian state, and we're going to end the states of war between us. Well, guess what, folks? If that's the case, then the Jews don't need nuclear weapons anymore. That's where Trump is going with all of this. It is to take away what has been the stated reason now for 60 years of why the Jews need nuclear weapons, because they're in a state of war. But if Trump flips that and he turns it into a state of peace, then there's no more justification. Now, of course, this is then we come to the sticking point here. And again, folks, I'm theorizing what I think it is that Trump wants to do and how he plans to do it. How are you going to get the Jews to give up their nukes? Okay. Well, it ain't going to be easy. It ain't going to be easy. But Trump already made certain allusions with an A, meaning he has alluded to this. He alluded to this when he was a candidate. And he has said other little things, tweeted little things, said little things that indicate where he possibly may be going with all of this. When he was candidate Trump, and he was asked about foreign aid to Israel, he said, we're going to pursue possibly making Israel pay it all back. And, you know, of course, it erupted in the usual screeching and hollering. Well, folks, the fact of the matter is that foreign aid that has been given to Israel is blatantly illegal. According to the provisions of the, I think it's called the Glenn-Symington Act, okay, the United States government is not allowed to give foreign aid to a country that is a nuclear power and has not declared it to be so, meaning they have nukes and they've kept them hidden. And they have kept them from international inspection and all of the rest of that. Okay. The aid is illegal. Yes, it's illegal because the Constitution does not give the U.S. government the power to give money to other nations. That's true. But it is even more illegal in the sense that foreign aid cannot be given to a non-declared nuclear power, if I'm remembering it correctly. Okay, so there are legal provisions in all of this. But more than that, folks, there's the statement that Trump made just a week ago where he said that he was threatening to declassify everything. Now, this all took place within the context of the discussion involving the elections. But if you go back and you actually read his tweet, he is threatening to declassify everything, which means maybe we're going to have a frank discussion about who killed JFK. Maybe we're going to have a frank discussion about the USS Liberty that nobody knows anything about. Maybe we'll declassify the files dealing with the bombing at Oklahoma City. Hey, maybe we'll declassify the files dealing with the five dancing Israelis arrested on 9/11. Oh, that's right. Yeah. They weren't dancing Muslims in New Jersey. They were dancing Jews. That is, I think, folks, I think that is the thing equally important that is driving the energy, the dark energy against Trump, is that they know he plans to take away their toys, their nuclear toys. And again, folks, going back to what that horrible, horrible rabbi said, you know, the Jews, as much as they have justified their getting nukes in terms of defending themselves against an Arab invasion, that is not true. The Jews got their nukes because they are the people of the book, as they describe themselves. And everything about the resurrection of this vampire, but in this case, Frankenstein, excuse me, known as Israel, Everything about this is going exactly as that rabbi said, according to the laws and the prophecies of the Torah. And the Torah is very clear on this, folks, that the world has to be consumed in fire and in bloodshed before the arrival of the Messiah. Now, of course, the world, folks, has been, especially since 9/11, has been consumed in fire and bloodshed. Okay, but this isn't what they have in mind. They're talking about billions of people being snuffed out, and that simply isn't possible without the use of nuclear weapons. Now, it is hard for us to imagine, folks, hard for us to imagine a group of people who are driven by such dark energies. Okay. And this is the next thing that I'm going to talk about very quickly, because we need to bring this program to a close. And I'm going to use this. This is the piece of meat for you to chew on for the next week until we get together again, God willing. And it is this topic of evil. It is very difficult for us, you know, those of us who live Gentile lives, to understand what it is like to be driven by dark energies such as those that drive these people and have from the beginning of time. Now, one of the things that we hear often from people is that, you know, the world is falling apart because there aren't enough people who believe in God and who fear his wrath. Well, there's a certain degree of truth to that, folks, but I think that the more accurate statement is that we find ourselves, our world falling apart today in the way that it is, because there are not enough people who believe in the devil and who fear his power. Now, when I talk about the devil, folks, I'm not talking about this winged angel with, you know, horns and a tail and a pitchfork. I'm talking about the very dark, very real energy known as evil. Now, you know, it's like the electricity in the outlet of your house, okay? You can't see it, you can't smell it, you can't, you know, there's no proof that it's there. The only proof that you have that it's there is when you plug something into it and that energy animates whatever that thing is, whether it's a blender or a coffee maker or something like that. And there's the proof that in that outlet exists that electricity, that energy. And I think that the same thing can be said about evil. It is a very real thing. It is as real as the electric in our homes, some of our homes. And all that it takes is for people to tap into that and to have it animate them the way that it animates the blender or the coffee maker or whatever, for proof that it exists. And it's obvious, folks. Okay, evil is real. And there are people who tap into it and are capable of doing things that we simply can't even imagine being possible. And this is the dark energy that drives these people, that has always driven these people. It's not a Khazar thing. It's not a Talmud thing, folks. And this is what I've tried to get across for many years. If you go back and read your Old Testament, okay, read your Old Testament through rational eyes, not through religious eyes, not through, you know, not through what your priest or your pastor or preacher told you, but read it through rational eyes, and you will see that these people have always been driven by this dark energy, this dark force. And of course, the obvious proof of that for us Christians is what took place on Crucifixion Friday. Because here they had the choice between freeing somebody who was a convicted murderer, Barabbas, or freeing Jesus Christ, who was a righteous, blameless, innocent man, and they chose to free Barabbas because he was one of them. You know, I see people, all of us, by virtue of us being made by our Creator, we're like these radio receivers, spiritual radio receivers. And just like the radio in your car, folks, you know, if it's an FM radio, you know, it goes all the way down to 87 hertz or something like that, and all the way up to 106. But there are a lot of other frequencies out there. There are frequencies much higher than 106 and much lower than 88. Okay, it's just that those frequencies are reserved for like fire departments and the military and police and things like that. And that's the reason why our radios in our cars or wherever, that they have fixed frequencies that they are able to pick up. And I think that in general, throughout human history, the Gentiles basically have always tuned their radios, their spiritual radio receivers, to those higher frequencies. And the proof of this is the fact that Gentiles have created these great civilizations, okay, whether it's Egypt, whether it's Greece, whether it's Rome, whether it's Persia, okay, and then all of the inventions, the art, the music, the medicine, all of this stuff all came from the higher vibrations that Gentiles tapped into, because they have, for the most part, they have their faces turned towards their Creator. Whereas with the Israelites, with the Hebrews, with the Jews, whatever we want to call them, folks, I think that these people, by virtue of being steeped in their Judaism for thousands of years, I think that they have their spiritual radio receivers tuned way, way down there, way past 87. Spiritual radio transmissions that emanate straight from the mouth of Satan himself. And this is the reason why I think, in the midst of all of the, especially in the last century, all of the great evils that we have seen, whether it's been the wars, whether it's been the slaughter of the unborn, the destruction of Gentile civilization, the destruction of the family, the destruction of the woman, pornography, all of this stuff sitting right in the middle of it, right in the driver's seat, is that corrosive force. And this is the thing that I would like all of you to think about in the next 6 days until we get together again, God willing. Let's see, we did go a little bit long today, folks. I apologize for that. Time just kind of got away. A lot of these thoughts, folks, are, you know, I don't put them together as well as I did in years past. And so that's why I have to revisit these things to give a better explanation to them. And this is obviously the reason why we went almost 90 minutes today. So anyway, I apologize for that. And I thank you for giving an hour and a half of your time that you will never get back in order to listen to these things and to consider these things. And on that note, folks, if you are interested in contributing to the costs associated with putting this program together, you can do so by contacting me at The Ugly Truth Radio Program. It's all one word, The Ugly Truth Radio Program, at gmail.com, and I will set you in the right direction. Until we meet again, folks, as I said before, it isn't over yet. We still have a lot of fighting to do. And, you know, Jesus said that during these times, it would be so bad, the deception would be so great, that were it not for the sake of the elect, no flesh would survive. Now plug that into the discussion that we had today, folks, and about the plans on the part of this corrosive force to bury America, to bury everything, really, as the precursor to raising themselves and their country up as the headquarters of Hashem, earth, that no flesh would survive except for the benefit of the elect. Well, who are the elect, folks? The elect are those people who are willing to seek after and to distinguish and discriminate in favor of the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help them, God, even when it is the ugly truth. That's it for today, folks. Have a good week. Stay safe, stay sharp, and we'll see you next time.